Hello and welcome to Animal Voices here on 100.5 FM in Vancouver. That's CFRO. Today is Friday, October 5th, 2012. My name's Alyssa Ray. I'm very pleased to be joined in studio today by my co-hosts, Allison Cole.
Hello.
And Tim Aretz.
Hello.
Animal Voices is Vancouver's only radio show dedicated solely to animal advocacy and compassionate living. We at Animal Voices believe in a world in which all animals, including humans, are afforded the basic right to live free of exploitation and harm. On today's show, we have a whole lot to discuss, so be sure to bear with us and stay tuned. First, we'll continue our discussion from last week's show and give you our rundown of reviews and top picks from the 31st Annual Vancouver International Film Festival. We'll be speaking with Bill Marin, the director of one of the films screening at the festival, Street Dogs of South Central. For the second half of the show, we'll be looking ahead to the Canadian holiday next Monday. Let's talk turkey. We feature an interview with Karen Don, the author of Thanking the Monkey. She'll be talking about her own very special compassionate Thanksgiving tradition. First off, let's talk about the Film Fest. This is the 31st Annual Vancouver International Film Fest, or VIFF, as followers and filmgoers call it. You can check out what's showing at VIFF at viff.org, and tickets are available there online. They're only $13 or $11 for students, seniors, and those with accessibility needs. And I wanted to talk first about some of the amazing films that we've seen. We talked a bit about it last week, but I've seen a couple more, and I wanted to really highlight these really powerful new films and make sure that animal advocates and our supporters get out there to support the Film Fest and the filmmakers. So first, a duo of films sponsored by the World Wildlife Fund. First is Facing Animals. It's a 30-minute filmic essay by Jan van Eyken from the Netherlands. And he says in the description that in Facing Animals, I give the hidden animals in industrial farms a face. I invite the viewer to think about the value of the animal. And this is a really powerful film I had a chance to see. It's a very powerful back and forth of some scenes which show reverence of animals in certain contexts and other scenes which show how humans treat certain animals as mere machines, particularly in factory farming. While there's no scenes of slaughter, there are some really gruesome scenes, particularly one in which piglets' testicles are violently removed without anesthetic. And this is, of course, standard practice on modern farms. And that film is actually showing with another film called The Birders of Central Park. It's an hour-long documentary by a U.S. director named Jeffrey Kimball. Almost a quarter of North Americans' bird species now flock to the center of Manhattan, luring hordes of amateur ornithologists along with them. The film shows the birds and also the unique characters of the bird watchers. And I think it's really smart that these two films are being played back to back. And I hope that wild bird lovers will be exposed perhaps to ideas they haven't considered in Facing Animals. So those are showing Monday, October 8th, next Monday afternoon, and Wednesday, October 10th in the early evening. And I think that's a great showing. Another film sponsored by the World Wildlife Fund is Leviathan. Tim, we watched Leviathan last week.
Yeah, Leviathan is a documentary about high sea fishing, and it's an immersive documentary, meaning that it's a lot of footage directly from the boat without any narration at all. And as the name suggests, it's quite monstrous. The filmmaker has placed these cameras on the boat and doesn't take really a specific stance. Are you watching this from the perspective of the fish or from the fisherman or from the boat or from the earth itself? There are interior and exterior shots, shots that you have never seen before. And it's a collaborative work by the directors Lucien Castin-Taylor and Verena Paravel. And what is quite interesting, that also all participants, including the sailors, the fish, and the birds who appear in the movie, are shown alongside each other in the credits. So there's really no distinction made between all the actors of the movie.
Yeah.
And watching it, I really couldn't decide whether I should have more compassion for the fish or for the fishermen, and I guess for both in a way.
Yeah, the one scene or one sort of juxtaposition, I guess, not that they were directly back to back, but seeing like the bulged out eyes of the fish that were just caught, that kind of explode under the pressure, and then also the eyes of the fishermen, which looked, there was this one long scene of the eye of a fisherman who'd been working on the boats for a long, long time, and you could just see he was just like the sea was just encrusted in him, and he looked so tired. But I would love to talk about it more. But I love Leviathan. You have to see it on the big screen. It's incredible. Another movie we saw was More Than Honey.
One second. The Leviathan is, I just want to announce when it's shown.
Sure, quickly.
It's on Sunday, October 7th at 9:15 p.m. at the Van City Theater, and on Tuesday, October 9th at 4:15 p.m. at the Empire Granville 2. So you have two more chances to see this marvelous movie, and you should really go and see it.
Great, and we just have a few more minutes, so More Than Honey, quickly. There was a Vancouver Meatless meetup group that actually went to see that film together. It was incredibly powerful. Tim and I, again, watched it together. I know there's been other movies made about the bees issue and the you know, colony collapse disorder, I think I had mentioned on last week, but I just wanted to say it is a very strong film, very eye-opening, a whole lot about industrial
absolutely
farming and how bees are involved in that, and how the African bees might actually have a chance to save us. So there's still a couple more, there's no more showings of More Than Honey, but keep your eyes open.
Yeah, we really hope that, or I really hope that it will be voted in the best of, and then will be shown at the end of the festival again.
Oh yeah, and I'm sure it'll have wide release after that. Most of these films will be available after with wide release. So yeah. Finally, I wanted to talk about a film called Revolution. It's the latest full-length documentary by Canadian Rob Stewart, who brought us the powerful and highly acclaimed film Sharkwater 6 years ago.
I remember him.
What an amazing film.
Young guy.
He is, and he's been working, traveling all over the world, and it has been uncovering how not just the sharks are in danger, but so many other species and actually the planet itself. So this like pans way back out of the oceans, kind of away from sharks. I think they're still involved because that's one of his major passions, but he's really just taken this this journey around the world, and he's highlighting in his new film people and organizations who are working to save our oceans, our wild nature, and all her inhabitants. So rave reviews so far, definitely one to see, and there's still three screenings of that one: tomorrow, Saturday, October 6th, Sunday, October 7th, and Wednesday, October 8th in the afternoon. Of course, check vif.org.
What's the name of the film again?
It's called Revolution.
Okay.
Yeah, it seems just like amazing global scope, like how to fix everything. Lots of hope in there too, and he's definitely not preachy, so it's a film for a wide audience. And of course that will be released in spring of next year, and we look forward to speaking with Rob Stewart about this work. And I think we are moving on now, because we actually have one of the directors of one of the films being featured at the Vancouver International Film Festival on the phone with us now. So Street Dogs of South Central is the name of the film. It's another noteworthy film being featured at the festival. It's a documentary which follows the lives of a number of homeless dogs who struggle to survive on the mean streets of South Central Los Angeles. I had a chance to view the film a while ago, Tim and I did, and I was touched by the stories of the courageous dogs named Elsie, Macy, and Flo, among others. I remember them, and I'm still rooting for them and hoping they're doing okay, because, So we're lucky enough to speak now to Bill. So hello, Bill, and thanks for joining us on Animal Voices today.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
Our pleasure. So for starters, I see that this is your first feature-length documentary. Can you tell us what motivated you to work on this particular issue?
Well, I've always been a huge animal lover, dogs in particular, and cats more recently. And I also studied animal behavior, so I already had a keen interest in the subject. And essentially, I moved out after grad school. I moved out to L.A., and my friend, who I went to college with, actually grew up in South Central. So I would visit him and his family, and he would tell me about all these dogs that he'd see in the neighborhood. And I'd always been interested in nature documentaries, so I thought it'd be really interesting to see if we could do a film in a nature documentary style and cover some of the stories that are happening out there, and at the end try to help all the animals by telling their story and showing what their lives are really like.
So this idea has been on your mind for a long time. How long since the inception of the idea has it taken to produce?
From first inception to the final product, it took about 10 years.
Amazing. Wow. So So you said you were schooled in animal behavior. You took that in university, or?
Yes. I went to Franklin Marshall College and studied animal behavior, and then I went to Boston University for grad school and studied film and television.
Oh, okay.
So it was the perfect combination, really.
Awesome. So one of the things that really stands out about the film is that it's not just a film about the problem of homeless dogs as a general category, but you really do your best to help viewers see life as the individual dogs see it. Can you tell us about how you went about trying to tell the story from the dog's perspective?
The format itself, there are no interviews. It's a true nature documentary, so there are no interviews. That was the first key element. And then really to cinematography-wise, just really trying to follow their lives, trying to move with them. So we'd move in the car next to them with them as they're crossing a street or as they're moving into another area. And we just really tried to be very intimate and wait to see what they were going to do and capture those intimate moments that no one else ever sees, that's kind of like hidden in their world. And then there aren't really any people. It was filmed in a way that the people sort of are kind of in the background. They're not really, even when we're when animal control is catching them, you're only really seeing feet and hands, and you're not seeing the faces of the people because they're not really part of the story. The people are just representing our society, really. So the individual people don't really matter. It's more about the animals themselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that was a really effective a part of it. And it seems to me, just as a vegan and as we talk about speciesism, it seems like a non-speciesist view. Like, I like how the humans were just parts and body parts, and that's kind of how they would sort of be to the dogs. So can you tell us a bit about how you found the protagonists of your story? How did these sort of characters emerge out of all the dogs that you were filming, and how did you how did you land on them?
Sure. For those that are listening and don't know, basically Elsie is a mom. We found her with four puppies that were still nursing, and then two of them disappeared, but she raised her two daughters into adulthood and went into heat through that process again. We found them. We sort of just knew where they were. They're creatures of habit, and we would go out there, and we know the places where they'd hang out, and sometimes we wouldn't find them. So it was a lot of work sometimes to find them, and also sometimes we would find them very quickly, but then they'd be sleeping for 5 hours, and we'd sit there in our car waiting for them to wake up. So, and they sometimes... It got too late in the day and a little too dangerous, where everyone's up, because we always shoot early in the morning, where we'd watch them sleep for 4 hours and that's it, we'd have to leave. So it's a true nature documentary, and that's what they do in the Serengeti. They'll sit and watch a pack of lions do nothing for 8 hours.
Yeah, whole lot of patience.
Yeah, so a lot of waiting around, but that's, when you wait, and then all of a sudden that really intimate moment happens and you capture it, it's just so rewarding.
Yeah. And can you tell us about the couple of pit bulls that you filmed as well?
Sure. The secondary story in this film is about two pit bulls, Jack and Jill. We call them Jack and Jill. And they're essentially a pack of two. that roam the streets together, and obviously because they're pit bulls, they're kind of in a more difficult situation. And they actually end up both getting hit by cars at the same time. It's kind of a chaotic time where it's raining, and they just find themselves caught in this really bad street, really busy street. And in that situation, we ended up calling animal control to have them helped because they really needed help, and they went through the shelter system. And this was a really important to tell this story because, you know, we wanted to cover every facet of their lives, and this is a major, major part of their lives, going through the shelter system. So everyone sees these dogs aren't just surviving on the streets. They're bad, many bad things that happen to them, and they don't belong on the streets. So the Jack and Jill story is very important. They went through the shelter system. I don't want to give away what happens to them, but...
Now I need to see the movie. I need to know.
But it covers what's needed to be covered and shows what is happening, good and bad, in the system. And hopefully it inspires people to get more involved.
I actually just realized that we didn't quite yet cover, like, what a huge problem this is in that area specifically. Can you tell us about the problem in Los Angeles?
Sure.
I know it's a lot worse than most other areas in North America.
Yeah, in North America, it's definitely one of the worst. It resembles a little bit more sort of the warmer third world countries, which are way worse. Mexico, Egypt, whatever, there's millions and many countries that people name that say it's just so, so bad, and we're very aware of that. As far as the United States, North America, it's a warm state, so there are going to be more litters of puppies that are going to survive. In the northern areas, the puppies just won't, the litters won't survive very cold temperatures. So you're going to have more and more dogs in L.A., in California. With the statistic we use is 30,000, and that's an estimate of based on various statistics. And people are always surprised at how large that is. But when you go out there, you realize that there are just so many of them.
Wow. Yeah, all different breeds. And I like how in the film you said, like, you know, they each have different traits bred into them that either help or hinder them on the streets. That's really interesting.
Right.
In the film, I noticed there's not really any, you know, solutions per se offered, but I see that you're definitely making some steps towards that aspect now that the film is complete. Can you tell us about how you see that this film might work to help combat the issue of homeless animals?
Sure, yeah, our goal really was to not make it preachy, not make it real opinionated, because our goal is to really tell the story and let the discussion happen afterwards. And I believe when people see the film, they realize there's nothing to say. We don't want to tell people what to do. We want people to be inspired and to become involved. And the situation is different, in every state, everywhere it's different. So we want to spark. We want to say, here's their lives. This is what's happening. Now let's put, you know, come together and find solutions. And a lot of that happens with our social media. After the film, the fundraiser screenings that we're doing. So it's a whole nother life after the film of what we can do. But the film itself, we want to be timeless. We don't want it to be specific to Los Angeles or specific to this year or anything like that. We want it to be a timeless story so the film can be used for decades to come and say, hey, this is what happens when dogs are left to the streets. It's always going to be like this. Not much of this is really going to change. But the solutions now can, you know, we can all come together and find a solution.
And are you starting to work with organizations who are working on solutions, maybe partner with them or?
Yes, we've partnered with some nonprofits. We would like to get as much involved in mobile spay neuter clinics in starting in LA and moving beyond that. The spay neuter is the most important element to stopping the pet overpopulation problem. Adoption is important as well. I don't believe we can adopt our way out of a problem like this. It's going to take a lot more than just that, but it's a very important component. And then getting the dogs off the streets is really important as well. And sometimes this is controversial because to get them off the streets, sometimes you're overcrowding the shelters, so the euthanasia rate may go up. But I think this film is important because it shows how much they're breeding on the streets. And mathematically, the numbers are just going up. And they may be killed not by euthanasia, but they may be killed by cars because there's so many of them. So it's important to get them off the streets. where he can keep the numbers down and also keep the pain and suffering down, because people don't understand what's going on in the streets. Is a lot of these dogs are getting hit and killed, if they're lucky. A lot of them are getting hit and injured, and they're limping around for a long time, and then they're starving as a result of the fact that they can't really get around. So too many people say, oh, I can't watch this movie. I don't want to see this. It's too sad. Well, this is what's happening. People need to see this movie because you need to know what's going on so you can be informed when we're making decisions to solve the problem.
Yeah, and one thing I like about it a lot is that it is gritty, and there is, you know, like some painful truths in it, but it also seems to me to be really family friendly and appropriate for, you know, mature children of, I don't know, say age 8 and up or so. Like, it seems really, with the stories of the family of dogs and stuff. I hope it gets out there far and wide for sure. And can you just tell us very quickly how people can see this film and learn more about these issues?
Sure. The film screens tomorrow at 3:20 at the Empire Granville Theater. We had two screenings. We had one yesterday and 2 days ago. Our website is streetdogsmovie.com. If you just type in Street Dogs of South Central Facebook, you'll find our Facebook page. We're very involved in Facebook. We're actually trying to get some dogs rescued right now, and their time's running out, so you can help us with that. Streetdogsmovie.com and Street Dogs of South Central Facebook would be the best way. You can write to us, tell us what you think. We're very involved in the community, and we're in many facets. So,
excellent. Well, thanks for letting us know. So again, that's Saturday, October 6th, tomorrow at 3:20 p.m. at the Empire Granville to get your chance to see it on the big screen. And hopefully it will have a wider release in theaters, hopefully early next year, I'm guessing. Thanks for joining us today, Bill. And best of luck with the film and with your message.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Take care.
Okay, bye-bye.
So now we got the news. I got three short stories. First, I want to give an update on the shark fin issue. The Langley Township Council now backs the shark fin ban, which is great news because only last month the council had turned down a proposal by Councillor Charlie Fox stating that it is none of their business what people eat.
Wow.
But after hearing from Anthony Marr, a spokesman for the Vancouver Island Animal Defense League, the council voted an amazing 8-1 to back Fox's motion. So just being educated and hearing about the gruesome practices.
But it's nobody's business.
Well, they said, oh, well, we don't eat shark fin, so we don't care. But
that's a nice attitude.
Now they saw like what's going on and they changed their mind. And I think that's really, really great.
Yeah, it was just a 5-minute presentation to council, and Anthony Marr knows what he's talking about.
Past
so,
Animal
awesome.
Voices host Anthony Marr,
yeah.
I might add.
That
kudos.
Really
who we've
wonderful.
Had on the show recently.
And then in related news, the Union of British Columbia Municipalities also passed a resolution for a provincial ban of the sale and trade of and distribution of shark fins, and for the federal government to advance Bill C-380 to ban the import of shark fins into Canada. Now, it's important to know that the UBCM is an advisory body representing BC municipalities, and it does not pass laws. And also, Bill C-380 is a private member's bill by New Westminster MP Finn Donnelly. So, and these private member bills rarely pass into law, so we shouldn't get our hopes up too early, but I still think it's a step in the right direction. And
got to start somewhere, right?
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. And we really can just hope that also Vancouver itself finally will ban
what a year this has been, though. 2012. Wow. It's
been
just
one after another after another.
It's exciting.
Of our local cities.
So that's really great.
I don't think we have much time to talk about the meat recall. But that has made huge headlines. Just maybe a minute?
Yeah, I just wanted to mention that the meat recall that has been going through the news has just recently been expanded again, and all major BC retailers are affected. They got meat from the processing plant in Alberta, where they have infected meat with E. coli bacteria. And I think this I can't help but feel a bit self-righteous about it. But I really think that people like see that the system, the food processing system as it is right now, and industrial farming is really not working and is really problematic. And I remember really well when I was younger growing up in Europe, there was a big mad cow disease scandal, and that got many people thinking.
Yeah,
and I really
sure.
hope that as bad as this is now, it really has a similar effect.
Yeah,
as well.
And this is the biggest meat recall in Canadian history, and it's making front page news. And the list of infected products, potentially infected products, is huge. And so they're basically just telling everyone, throw out everything, all beef. So
stop eating cows, people.
Yep.
Thanks for that. So we have an upcoming event that is coming this Sunday that I wanted to chat about. Alyssa, I think you're attending the aquarium demo. We're also having another event the day after, and I've unfortunately have had to cancel it from my schedules. But there is going to be a large Vancouver aquarium protest, and on Facebook, there's 159 people going so far. It's being put on by, I believe, No Whales in Captivity, and they want for you to join them outside the Vancouver Aquarium for a protest that is going to be held in solidarity with the one being held outside of Marineland in Niagara Falls, actually, at the same time. So what's happening in Marineland is Rick O'Berry, who we've had on the show, and a couple years ago he was the star of the Cove film, so people probably are very well aware of who he is. He's going to be protesting this Sunday at Marineland to protest the appalling conditions for the animals there. And he says that it's one of the worst, it's the worst one on the North American continent and maybe the world, as in a whale jail and aquarium and that. Yeah. So in solidarity, we're having a protest here where the animals do not fare that much better. I mean, they're being kept in captivity. That's happening starting at 11 a.m. and it's going until 2 p.m. But the organizers do ask that if you're going to attend, please get there before noon for sure, because that's when the media is going to arrive. So if you can't even make it there, watch it on the news that night, I guess. But you can help carry banners and hand out flyers. It's happening rain or shine. Bring lots of friends and family to help stop the cruel capture and display of marine mammals in both of Canada's whale jails.
Thank you for that, Allison. Mm-hmm. Now, for the second half of our show, I wanted to give a nod to our upcoming Canadian holiday on Monday. We call it Thanksgiving, with a capital T. And I just wanted to sort of say that I'm hoping that we can start maybe using different language in future, because I wanted to remember and honor what it represents, which is when the early European settlers came and to North America and met the indigenous peoples and started to colonize this previously settled land. So I like to call it, or Tim suggested, Thanks Harvest Meal, and I like
Thanks Living.
Thanks Living is great, or just a gratitude feast. So that's what most Canadian families will be celebrating this weekend on Sunday and Monday. And I just kind of wanted to say that we've done amazing Thanksgiving shows the past couple years. I think Allison and Carissa.
They've always seemed to have fallen on my show, I think, for the past 2 years at least.
Well, I was just looking at them and I was thinking, wow, I could do another Thanksgiving show, but wow, Allison has already done such a thorough job. So I just wanted to, I think what we'll do is repost on our blog links
to
those shows.
For sure, too.
Because there's an extensive list of links for tips on celebrating compassionately from a number of different resources and all different kinds of ideas for what to eat and how to deal with the kind of diplomatic communication strategies with family, and just that sort of awful presence of that bird carcass, which we usually
that's always worth talking
like
more about
to
I
avoid.
Think.
I know, yeah. And so that's why I'm giving the second half of our show. I'm dedicating to the Thanks Living celebration. Also, on the past shows, we had great interviews with representatives of Farm Sanctuary. Trisha Berry and Susie Costin were featured on the show, talking about all their amazing programs. So we'll go over those a little bit. But first, I wanted to just say, of course, this is a harvest celebration. It goes way back before this sort of settler issue. I'm sure pagans for many, many years just celebrated the wonderful bounty that we have. So bringing it back to that and remembering that this isn't a turkey day, as some people call it.
It's tofurkey day.
It's exactly.
Well, someone sent me... Or someone posted online, or I think actually sent me an email saying "Happy Tofurkey Day," and it had this really cute picture
of
a turkey.
Or celebrate the Turkey's Day.
Yeah, I like the idea of celebrating the Turkey's Day at I know at Animal Acre Sanctuary where I volunteered. They and I don't know if they still do this, but they would have a Thanks Living where they're feeding the turkeys cranberries, and people from all over are coming, and they've got like celebrities there just like to really appreciate them, and they're so cute and wonderful, as both you and I know.
Yeah,
turkeys
definitely.
Are awesome.
We've both met a couple very special turkeys. We went to the Rescue Sanctuary, which used to be on Main Island in BC, and we met Kevin and
Alyssa's other boyfriend.
My other boyfriend. My heart will always be with Kevin. He was so friendly, and he just came up and cuddled us and wrapped, you know, tried to get his way up onto my lap and wrapped his neck around my neck.
All animals like cuddles. That's the thing, is that all animals are like
and
that.
Some,
but we
some
just
are
don't
more shy than others,
that.
And it takes time.
And
Kevin
some are grumpy, just like people,
exactly.
And don't like to be around people. But really, everyone wants love. Everyone, including all non-human animals.
Totally. So I just wanted to quickly, let's just do a back and forth sort of game here about what we could have on our table as a centerpiece focal meal.
And this is totally unrehearsed.
Instead, well, I'm testing
okay.
you. I have a long list here, so I can
I'm
just
sure
keep
I do
going
too.
If you can.
Yeah,
but,
yeah, yeah.
Okay. Okay, so I'll go first.
Okay.
Field roast, stuffed hazelnut, cranberry roast. That's a product you can buy probably at Carmivore and other places.
At Whole Foods, too. I wanted to add the new Gardein turkey roast, which is next to the field roast at Whole Foods right now and cheaper. And it looks really exciting. And I've heard it tastes just like their small roasted turkey balls, which I had one of those a few weeks ago. It's so delicious.
That's the latest. There's also the field roast celebration roast. Mm-hmm. And?
Oh, okay. Tofurkey. Which we're having at our potluck next week. So everyone who attends that can get a taste of tofurkey.
Acorn squash stuffed with nuts and herbs and rice.
Okay, there's this seitan Wellington dish in one of the books that I'm currently reviewing for the show, and it's the spork-fed book, seitan Wellington. It looks really good. It's got like seitan, and it's covered with some kind of a flaky puff pastry crust, and it looks like a big roast.
For those who don't know, seitan is a wheat meat that you can make yourself,
it's so easy to make.
A lentil loaf with delicious seasonings to taste sort of like stuffing.
And I would like to add to that, how about like a nut loaf? That's another recipe in The Lucky Ones by Jenny Brown. She's got this, I was reading it last night, this nut loaf that says it's to die for. It's got cashews and walnuts or whatever other pecans, whatever other kinds of nuts you want. And that just really makes a really good kind of meaty base because it's nut meat. Mm-hmm. Meat can, the word can extend to other types of products.
That sounds good. Yeah. Last year I made a stuffing kind of roast. I just filled it with stuffing and I used different kinds of bread and nuts and it was really nice. Unturkey is another one.
That was going to be mine.
Oh, I stole it. I stole your turn too.
Well, okay. What do you mean by that?
I don't know, actually. You tell me.
Okay, so, because I think there used to be a product called Unturkey, but I wasn't thinking of that. They no longer exist. So what I was thinking was a recipe that I made many years ago when I first made I used to make big, huge Thanksgiving dinners every year for basically me and one other person, tons of leftovers. And so I wanted to try different, like, Unturkey kind of roasts. And so it's this big, you can find the recipe online. I don't know, like, it's something to try out for sure. You basically squish a whole bunch of mashed tofu along a colander to make sort of a round shape, and then you put stuffing in it, and you cover it up, and you roast it, like as you just would a tofurkey or whatever, and that would be the unturkey or tofu turkey. I guess you could look up tofu turkey to see how that was made. I didn't care for it that much, but maybe other people would.
That sounds lovely. I think that's a great start there for people who need inspiration.
Lots of suggestions.
And there it was a couple events this week. I just wanted to give a shout out to Liberation BC, who organized an awesome leafleting event. They do that every year around Thanksgiving, the week before. They stand at very busy SkyTrain stations and hand out their talking turkey, I think it's called, leaflet, and it has some great recipes in it. And that's always a part of my tradition this week. And also PETA was in town yesterday. PETA organized a demonstration, I guess, where they gave out free tofurkeys at Robson and Burrard. And there was also another protest going on at the same spot. Place by a group that was, or some citizens who wanted to promote total liberation, so liberation for the turkeys and for humans and everything. And I think they ended up getting along, which was great. Also, I just wanted to give a shout out, of course, to Farm Sanctuary and their Adopt a Turkey program. You can support a turkey online, and I think you get a certificate of care. So instead of buying that bird and putting it in the oven, you can support the life of the natural life of a bird at a farm sanctuary in the States. And they also have an express adoption program around this week where they visit the houses of people who want to adopt turkeys to let them live out their natural lives. And that sort of is a segue to us talking finally one more time about our upcoming potluck Thanksgiving, Thanksgiving celebration and variety show, which is next Monday, October 8th, 2012, 6 to 9 p.m. It's at St. James Community Square Hall, which is just a beautiful...
And we were just there today.
It's beautiful. Alyssa
saw it for the first time. It is. It's great. I'm just really excited about this. It's a great space.
Yeah, and they really believe in supporting community and nonprofits, and the values are there. It's not just an empty hall. So we invite people to celebrate with us for the second time this way. We did it again. We did it previously last year, and we're really excited. So we have a couple other sponsors this year. Vancouver Meatless Meetup and Stop UBC Animal Research are partnering with us.
And Turtle Island Foods. Free tofurkey for everyone.
12 whole tofurkey roasts. Enough for everyone. And we have gathered up a huge amount of volunteers, and I am so thankful to each and every one of those people for stepping up, because it is definitely a community effort, and we all work very hard to make this happen. So thank you so much to all the volunteers. I look forward to meeting you all. We're inviting everyone to bring a vegan dish to share. This is a potluck, of course, so free of any animal products, enough to serve about 8. We want you to bring a plate, cutlery, and a serving utensil, of course. There's no dishes this year. So this year, and also we are hosting a variety show showcasing the entertaining talents of our guests. If you'd like to perform, you can still email us at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com. There's still some space on the list. We want people to step up. I was thinking it would be really nice if someone just came up and read a really nice poem or something like that.
Talking about variety show?
Yeah, yeah.
Got to contact us today, though, please. radioanimalvoices@gmail.com.
Yeah. There's going to be a raffle fundraiser, and Allison has been working very hard collecting prizes for the raffle. Her raffles are always the most amazing.
So, yeah, so I wanted to talk a little bit about the raffle, because we've got some great sponsors who have donated some wonderful prizes. Our grand prize is going to be a $395 value gift certificate for a cooking workshop called Feed Life Starve Cancer. It's a plant-based cooking workshop, all vegan, and it's being put on by the company called Feed Life that does these workshops online, or sorry, not online, in Vancouver. The secondary grand prize is going to be a wonderful gift package of Vega health supplement products that are valued at nearly $200, and there's lots of good stuff in there. If you know the Vega products, they aren't cheap, so this is going to be a really wonderful gift basket to win. And then our tertiary grand prize is going to be a cat cabin, which is this large and beautiful pink cat house for your feline friend. That's valued at $99. We have lots of other wonderful prizes. We have a gift basket of assorted vegan food. We have a Frobo cold dog water dish, which is basically it keeps cold by freezing somehow. We have a whole bunch of books, vegan cookbooks. We have a Forks Over Knives DVD. We have some jewelry. We have gift certificates for Paternal Abundance Restaurant and Gorilla Food Restaurant and vegan cupcakes at Fairy Cakes. I just wanted to thank some of our sponsors.
Yeah.
Adorned Precision Body Art. We have some t-shirts from them. The book publishing company, DeCapo Lifelong Books, Edward and Sons, Eternal Abundance, Fairy Cakes, Feed Life, Gorilla Food, the Impetus Agency, North Atlantic Books, and Sequel Naturals. So I think that's all for now. We'll chat a little bit more about it at the end. But once again, that's Monday, October the 8th, and it's at 3214 St. James Community Hall. Please bring a vegan dish, $5 entry fee.
3214 West 10th in Kits, yeah. Yeah, so that's about it. We hope to see everyone there. We're very excited. We think probably about 150 people are coming, so that's a whole lot of feasting that will go on. So I wanted to feature our next guest now. Karen Dawn is the media maven and writer behind the animal advocacy media program, DawnWatch.com. As a spokesperson for the animal rights movement, she's appeared on all of the major news networks in the U.S. and on MTV and has hosted talk shows on major radio stations. Her book, Thanking the Monkey, Rethinking the Way We Treat Animals, was chosen by the Washington Post as one of the best books of 2008. Karen joins us today on the phone from California to share her own very special Thanksgiving tradition. So I found Karen while searching out examples of Thanksgiving compassion, and I came across your touching and informative videos. Thanks for joining us, Karen.
Hi, Karen.
Hi, it's good to be here. I'll be with you in Vancouver.
Yeah, it's lovely to hear from you. So I wonder if you can describe for us how you celebrate Thanksgiving.
Well, I heard you talking about all the things you put on your table, you know, nut loaves and whatever, but the front and center that I always use is wild turkey. That's wild turkey bourbon, baby. This is not a family show, is it?
Talking about drinking
show.
Is fine, I think.
It's allowed. Just no actual drinking.
Oh, not on the show. Okay. But we always have a... I definitely call it Turkey Day in my house because I think, you know, you found the video showing that I bring a couple of turkeys home. I've been doing that for the last 4 years. And before I did that, I adopted by a farm sanctuary. So there was always a picture of a turkey in the middle of the table next to the wild turkey bourbon bottle. And then about 4 years ago, I just realized, hey, I want the real thing. So I usually have two turkeys strutting around my front yard over the Thanksgiving season, which people can come visit them and say hello to them and get to know them as lovely animals who they can pet and chat with and hang out with rather than roast in the oven.
Wow. So where do you find these turkeys?
Well, basically at the local slaughterhouse. I decided to do this about 4 years ago, and I didn't know exactly what I was going to do. But, I'd lived in an apartment most of my life in New York City, and then when I moved to Los Angeles, we had a yard, and I remember friends that had chickens, and my dogs, Buster and Paula at the time, really loved, I used to get eggs for them at from a local farm where the chickens, you know, roamed around freely and happily, and I thought, okay, that was an ethical way to get my dog's eggs. Then I learned a little bit more about the hen industry, and learned that, well, even if the hens were being treated well, what happened to their brothers? So I thought, you know, I can't even support a sort of a really, really nice farm and get the eggs. So I thought the only ethical way of having eggs would be to have my own hens who'd been rescued. So I thought I'd really like to do that and thought about it. And then Thanksgiving was coming up. And I had, back in the year 2000, I'd visited the Poplar Spring Farm Animal Sanctuary and fallen in love with this turkey named Olivia. And I remembered this great affection that I had developed towards turkeys. And with Thanksgiving coming up, I thought, I wonder if I can maybe think about having live turkeys around my house around Thanksgiving. And the idea started buzzing around my head. And then I think you mentioned in the introduction that I do a lot of media work. That's sort of my specialty in the animal rights movement. I teach people, I lecture on how to get media and how to get the media interested in our stories and what we're doing. And I had been in the Los Angeles Times a couple of times with my pit bulls. I was so happy to hear you guys talking about pit bulls earlier in the show. And I called up the reporter and I said, Carla, if I were to have live turkeys sort of strolling around my, you know, my yard over Thanksgiving, do you think that's a story that the Los Angeles Times might be interested in doing? And she said, oh, I think our photo department would love it. And indeed, she called me back. And so that's how this all started, was basically as a way to get media attention to what happens to turkeys on Thanksgiving. And we thought, well, if we have them sort of making their home in the middle of Pacific Palisades, that would be a good media story. So that's how this began.
Oh, beautiful. So Ken, you mentioned sort of what goes on for birds. Just for people who might not know, what is life like for turkeys that are farmed for their flesh?
Well, for most of them, you know, and this is actually you mentioned coming across the videos online, and if I think, you know, there's actually mixed in with the fun stories of, you know, my turkeys and my turkey rescues, we actually have video provided from Farmer Sanctuary and Mercy for Animals of undercover, it's undercover video of turkey farms and slaughterhouses. And so if people go to my YouTube channel, Spanking the Monkey, not Spanking, Spanking, T-H, Spanking the Monkey, and if you go to that page, you see the turkey rescue video, and there you see the stories of the turkeys, but you also see video of turkeys raised in factory farms who are packed in so tight that they actually have their toes chopped off and their beaks seared off so that they won't cause injury to each other, basically injure the lucrative, you know, flesh by hurting each other. And as far as hens and egg-laying birds, the males are thrown live into grinders when they're young. The turkeys, both male and female, are eaten, but they're generally eaten at about 4 months of age. So they're genetically bred to grow very, very fast so that they reach a weight by about 4 months where they can be eaten. And the living conditions until then are really unconscionable. And the thing with turkeys, I'm not sure what the story is in Canada, but here in the U.S., they're excluded from the Humane Slaughter Act. So there are absolutely no laws as to how they can be killed, and you see some of the horrendous things that happen to them when you go and you watch these videos of them just being shackled up by their legs and having their throat slits, and you see them flapping and trying to get away. And it's nasty stuff, and it's when you meet these animals, when you actually ever, I don't know how many of your listeners have actually been to a sanctuary and had the pleasure of meeting a turkey who's been
well-treated. Lisa and I were talking about meeting turkeys at a sanctuary. It's just a wonderful experience, and they're just such loving creatures. Like I said, like all living creatures are, really, if you give them a chance.
Exactly. I've exactly heard you say everybody wants to be loved, and people don't expect that of turkeys. But I remember when I met my first turkey, whose name was Olivia, and she was living on a sanctuary in Poplar Springs.
Right, I've been there. It's such a wonderful place. I was there this summer, and it's the sanctuary that I can say that the animals were so friendly, the friendliest of all sanctuaries I've been to, because I feel like they just really feel like they're in a safe place and they're being loved. So they extend that to the humans.
Right, and I remember, you know, when I went to the sanctuary, I thought I was interested in meeting the pigs. I'd seen Babe, and I thought it was all about the pigs. And I didn't think I had much interest in the turkeys. And then, but the tour started at the turkey coop, and I remember I was sitting in the grass. It was this gorgeous spring day, and Terry, the sanctuary owner, let Olivia wander out. And she came hobbling up towards us, and she was hobbling because, as I mentioned, you know, they cut the the digits of their toes off on these factory farms. And Olivia had come from a factory farm that Hurricane Floyd wiped out the factory farm and ironically saved her life. And she came hobbling over, and she came close enough for me to pet her. When I started to pet her, it was so much like petting my dog. And she moved closer and closer the more I pet her, till she finally moved into my lap. And she sat down on my lap, and I was petting her, and I reached up under, you know, you can feel that down that we've only ever felt in pillows. So you can feel that softly on their bodies. And as I'm moving my fingers through her down, she fell asleep in my lap, and I was just... she fell asleep, and I fell in love.
Actually, when we were there, too, a rooster fell asleep in my friend's lap, which is really just so sweet. I took a video of the rooster snoring, basically.
It's such a beautiful experience. That was from then on that I my love affair with turkeys began, and I started to adopt them, you know, via the web as... you know, so many people do on Thanksgiving. And I hope a lot of people will go to the Farmer Sanctuary website or the Poplar Spring website also. They both have Adopt a Turkey programs. And you can give, it's not expensive. I don't know if it's $20 a year or something like that to keep a turkey well and safe. And then on your table next to your nut loaf or your turkey, you can have a picture of a turkey who you're responsible for keeping alive.
They usually send you a photo with their likes and dislikes and their personality traits. I display those photos on my wall.
They definitely all have, don't they? They all have very different personalities.
Yeah.
So that's what I did for years. And then when the opportunity came to, you know, it was basically, as I said, it was sort of a media stunt to see if we could get some media, which we did. We got lots and lots of media, big story in the Los Angeles Times, and then all the local TV networks covered it. Now I do it every year because it's so much fun to have the turkeys here over Thanksgiving, and because it does get a lot of media, because it's a fun, warm story. And the great news is that when the media outlets cover the turkey story, it has two outcomes. One is that people see that these animals are loving and like to be petted, and it hopefully makes people think a little bit. And the other is often when the media outlet is covering this fun turkey story, they will also share some of the not very fun video that we send them about what happens to turkeys. So, for example, here in Los Angeles on Thanksgiving Day, KTLA ran a story where they showed me and the turkeys, you know, all cuddling in the front yard with the neighbors. But then they also had about 30 seconds of sort of video of what goes on in the slaughterhouses and the fact that turkeys aren't protected under the humane slaughter laws. Mm-hmm. So while people were busy cooking their turkey dinners, they got to see what's happening to these poor birds, which is a nice outcome as well.
I know more and more people are, you know, starting to wake up, and I think people are choosing quote-unquote free-range or humanely raised birds to serve. What would you say to people who say they're going that way?
It's a good first step, but it's certainly not a good end result for the turkeys. And the reason I say it's a good first step is that obviously, you know, if turkeys are humanely raised rather than factory farmed, it's slightly better. But what I'm always amused is a few years ago when Sarah Palin did her famous talk where she was exactly. But the thing is, people were so mortified by that, and of course, those were turkeys on one of those humanely raised farms, and they had it better than most turkeys have it.
For people who don't know what we're talking about, maybe you can explain what was happening.
Oh, right. Yeah. Sarah Palin was interviewed about, I guess it was 4 years ago, and she was merrily chatting about her hopes for becoming vice president of the United States, and it was right around Thanksgiving time. And while she's being interviewed, in the background right behind her, this poor turkey is being stuffed down in this funnel and having his throat slit. And it's the most horrifying sight. And it was sort of funny that she was so oblivious. But what I thought was so interesting at the time was that people were so shocked and horrified. But of course, this was, you know, one of these humane farms where the birds weren't being strung up by the tens and whatever. And if people found that hard to stomach, I mean, imagine how they
feel about
the factory farms.
Still getting their throat slit.
That's exactly. Mm-hmm. So as far as the humane thing goes, you know, sometimes people, I feel like their first step is they learn about factory farming and they learn about these slaughterhouses that aren't even covered on the, under the humane slaughter laws, and they think, oh, well, I can't give up turkey, so let me at least go buy an organic turkey or whatever. Yeah. And I do think, you know, it shows that you are starting to think at least a little bit about what's going on, and that, and you're starting to acknowledge that turkeys matter and that these are animals. And so, you know, I certainly, before I became vegan, I did start to think about, you know, trying to buy eggs that weren't, that were cage-free and stuff like that. But it doesn't take long that once you've started mm-hmm. to think at all, once you've started to acknowledge that these are animals and they matter, hopefully it doesn't take long from there to realize, you know, if I am worried about their suffering enough to try and buy my eggs or my turkey at a different place, then why on earth am I eating them at all? Mm-hmm. So, you know, hopefully most people will hop through that humanely raised step pretty quickly, or just avoid it and just think, you know, there's so many great non-animal based products to be eating now.
Definitely.
And there's so much, you know, the whole humanely raised thing doesn't address the human health and the environmental aspects of eating meat. And, you know, if you see a film like Forks Over Knives and you realize what animal products are doing to your body, then obviously the answer isn't to go and buy humanely raised animal products. It's mm-hmm. just about making a shift in your diet.
Yeah, there's a lot of connections there. Thank you for shedding light on that, and thank you for your wisdom. And I wish you a happy Thanksgiving in the U.S., which is next month. And I hope...
I definitely call it Turkey Day in my house. So yeah. It's, you know, always good to remember Turkey Day is a lot more fun when the turkeys are alive and
yeah.
well.
I look forward to seeing the videos of your new turkey friends for this year's celebration. And
Lisa, thank you for having me on, getting to chat about my turkey friends.
Oh, our pleasure. Our pleasure. We will link your videos on our blog. And thanks so much, Karen. Have a good one.
Great. Take care. Bye.
You have been listening to the Animal Voices Radio Show. It's been our Thanksgiving show on 100.5 FM Co-op Radio in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Just a reminder about our Animal Voices Compassionate Thanksgiving Potluck and Variety Show that's happening next Monday, October the 8th in Vancouver, 3214 West 10th at 6 p.m. Bring a vegan dish. It's going to be lots of fun. Free tofurkey. It is accessible and lots of raffle prizes. We've got about 30 prizes to give out. Next week on the show, in anticipation of a local upcoming screening of the documentary film called Got the Facts on Milk, we'll have the producer, director, and writer of the film, Shira Lane, on the show to speak about the film. We are leaving you with a song called Turkey Song by Will Tuttle for this special day. Stay tuned now for a Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith. Thank you so much for listening to Animal Voices today, and remember to be kind to the animals. Thank you.
Bye.